Ты... Марсрам Васе... Крви... И поколение своего... Обресе любши... Туи, господар... Не питно... Откот прихая... А найсе ми, потомци кралјев, удињамо татовом конским. Најклеће плазимо пред туйци, се кланјамо барбаром, ти владају нам шестолетја, поносним. Заратустре! samo svoj načrt izvaja. Samo svoj načrt izvaja. Zvijezde nad nami su neme. Prepušteni smo slutnja i se utajamo prevara. Strašen je Bog, ki nas vodi.
یکی سوخته، یکی پخته، یکی ذکر خدا گفته.
strašan je Bog ki nas vodi.
Hello, loyal listeners. I'm Connor, host of Bitcoover FM, Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. And we wouldn't be where we are today without you tuning in and interacting with us as an audience. And so, from the internet, from the virtual plaza, thank you.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Welcome to CJSF 90.1 FM, here broadcasting from Vancouver, Burnaby Mountain. My name is Chris Spangenberg, and I am the producer of this series of interviews. Now, this is the fourth episode of an eight-part episodic series on traditional Chinese medicine, also known as TCM, and the traditional Chinese medicine community here in Vancouver. In the course of these interviews, I examine the local culture and practice of traditional Chinese medicine, as well as inquire into its philosophy and difference from Western medicinal practices. This series is produced for CJSF 90.1 FM's Making Time for Radio project. Today's interview is the second half of a long interview with Dr. Yvonne Evan, an acupuncturist, herbalist, translator, and clinic owner of Rocky Mountain Wellness in Port Moody. Yvonne stands out in the TCM community for his interest and scholarship in classical Chinese medicine, especially classical Chinese medicine texts such as the Yellow Emperor's Classic of Chinese Medicine and the Treatise on Cold Damage Disorders. He is also involved with translation of such texts into English. In this last part of the interview with Yvonne, we talk about the differences between classical Chinese medicine and the conventional model of TCM, as well as the importance of the scholarship and translation of the old Chinese medicine texts. We begin with discussing the significant differences between classical Chinese medicine and contemporary TCM as practiced today. Next, we talk about the importance of the translation of classical Chinese texts into English and Yvonne's methods of translation. Yvonne elucidates on his call for a classical revival and briefly discusses what academic and institutional changes would best foster a return to classical Chinese medicine. We end the interview examining the Taoist origins of Chinese medicine. My name is Chris Spangenberg, and you are listening to an interview between me and Dr. Yvonne Evan here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Significant differences between classical Chinese medicine as you practice it and the conventional model of TCM taught in modern China.
That's a very important question. I think that this is a big area of division right now that's happening, is that, you know, there's a lot of practitioners who feel that after, in the 50s, when they institutionalized Chinese medicine, they really, really watered it down. They condensed it in a way that they wanted to basically educate it and teach it in a very shortened way. And so what they had done was they had diluted a lot of the old classical literature and stuff and really put a focus on biomedicalizing the medicine and putting it, you know, into fancy little boxes and making it easy to learn and stuff, which, unfortunately, I mean, this is the way it's being taught. This is the way it's being taught in the mainland. This is the way it's being taught really everywhere around the world right now. And that is what we now consider traditional Chinese medicine. And it's a very, very big difference from classical Chinese medicine. Classical Chinese medicine really puts a lot of emphasis in the old classical texts and things like the Huangdi Neijing, which is the Yellow Emperor's internal classic, and reading more Taoist texts and even delving into a little bit of Confucian texts, but also putting a lot more emphasis on the clinical handbooks, things like the Shanghan Lun, which I had mentioned before, and the Jingui Yawei, and many other writings that followed suit. And really, classical Chinese medicine is, I mean, it depends on who you ask, but some people will say classical Chinese medicine is, you know, up until the Han Dynasty, so it ended in the late 200s, and some people will say classical Chinese medicine is anything that refers to pre-Mao medicine. And what they mean by pre-Mao medicine is when Mao Zedong called for the revival of Chinese medicine and institutionalized it. And so it really depends on who you ask. I think that essentially, you know, there are differences, of course, in treatment outcome. I don't really know. I mean, because modern TCM, there's nothing really wrong with modern TCM. When it's applied correctly, it can be very effective. I'm by no means, you know, going to allude to the possibility that it's not effective or it doesn't work. I just think that in my own opinion, in my own love for the medicine, I think that there really needs to be a return to the classics, because I think that that's where the real medicine is. And a good analogy that one of my teachers actually used, which I really, really love, is that, you know, he likens classical Chinese medicine to a spring in the Himalayas, like a very small spring that eventually moves into a river, which essentially will continue to run along its course into a lake and then break off into trajectories and then dump into the Yangtze River and then eventually meet all the way into China, into the Bohai Sea and into the ocean. And so his analogy for that is that classical Chinese medicine is like that spring in the Himalayas. It's very pure. It's very clean. It's unadulterated, and modern TCM might be more like the meeting of the Yangtze River and the ocean, that it's gone through a lot of changes, and it might have been a little bit more murky now and a little bit more polluted. And so I think it's a bit of an extreme analogy, but I think most people would get the point behind that.
What academic and institutional changes would best foster a return to classical Chinese medicine?
Essentially, what the institutions would have to do would put more emphasis on the classics, on really, really having a classical revival and having the students read the texts more. I think that, you know, it is changing, though. There are a lot more classical courses being taught at the universities, more so at the graduate and the postgraduate level. I think at the undergraduate level, whether it's in North America or Europe or in China, there's still an expectation of, you know, the curriculum that needs to be taught and stuff. And there's very little emphasis really on the classics. So you really have to get into the much higher levels, into the graduate and postgraduate studies to do that. And in fact, actually, at my university, at Nanjing University of Chinese Medicine right now, in October, they're opening up a department through the university, and it's the Jingfang department through the Nanjing University, which the emphasis there will be 100% on reviving the classics and putting a lot of emphasis on classical education and really, really focusing on the Shanghan Zabinglun and all the clinical herbal texts that were so important at that time.
Where were the best experts in classical Chinese medicine to be found?
All over the place. I don't think that they're limited to just to China. There are a lot of wonderful, wonderful practitioners in China, but there's also a lot of great practitioners in North America and in Europe. I think it really depends. I think there, over the last 10 or 15 years, I really believe that there has been a classical revival. It really is different now than it was 10 or 15 years ago. And so you've got a lot of people who have returned to China, who have really worked under discipleship with very, very, very important doctors and are doing a really beautiful, beautiful job in bringing the classics back to the West, and even to the East for that matter. I've seen a lot of classical conferences happen in China that bring out hundreds and hundreds of people. So I really do think that there is really a classical revival. There's also a book that came out, I don't know how many years, maybe about 10 years ago, maybe even longer, by a doctor named Liu Lihong. He's a Chinese doctor based out of Guangxi University, and he wrote a book. It's in Chinese. I believe it is being translated right now into English, but it's called the Su Kao Zhong Yi. So it's this exploring Chinese medicine, and he really, really delves very deep into the need for a classical revival and discusses in very fine detail about the problems with modern traditional Chinese medicine and why it's important to return to the source of our teachings.
Could you talk a little about the importance of the translation of ancient Chinese medicine texts? Why is translation of the literature so important?
Because there's so little of it. I think that's the problem. I think that right now in Chinese medicine, if you were going to go into a Chinese library at a Chinese university, it is overwhelming. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of books, journals, articles that in Chinese about Chinese medicine, spanning, you know, the Shang Dynasty to modern day writings. It really is quite overwhelming and exciting if you're me as well. But the rough estimate right now is that maybe 2-3% of major texts have been translated into English or into other languages. And to me, I mean, that number is far too low. If somebody wanted to really explore classical studies in English, they would be very limited. I mean, there are a number of books out there. It's much better than it used to be, but there's still very, very little. And so to have only 2-3% available to English speakers of what is available to Chinese speakers is really, it's just too little. So I believe that one of the most important things we can do right now in order to support this classical revival and to really bring back the classics and the importance is we just need to translate more and more and more and get as many books out there, as many articles as possible. I mean, this is part of why I started my case study blog many years ago, was to translate as much as possible. And also the book that I published a couple of years ago is just, you know, a small step towards adding to the literature that we've got available in English.
How many people do you know are involved in the translation work?
Offhand, I know several people that are involved in translation.